Okay, so plan to basically just work example problems today. Given what time we have, I think help you prep for your exam. On Thursday, before we start that, however, any questions about what's going to go down on Thursday? Yes, sir. Historically, those that don't know the material well will not finish. The inverse of that's also true. I think if you know this material pretty well, the test will go quickly. So ends up being kind of a binormal distribution. There's people that finish kind of early and people that last a long time generally. And there's a pretty high correlation between how well those students do, grade-wise. Other questions? As a reminder, the equation sheet's already posted. It's going to be attached to the exam as well. I'll bring the paper. No calculators, anything like that. I'll want your desk cleared off. I don't need to see your bags up front. I'll watch you. Don't make me come after you for trying to cheat, because I will, with whatever tools at my disposal. Think that'll be a problem. Hopefully it's not. And then we'll start right on time like we generally do. And then 1:45, pencils down, get out of here. Okay. Heard from a few of you that need to take your exam over in ODS. If you haven't gotten me your information yet, please do so I can let them know who to expect on Thursday. Another question?
Can we write on the equation sheet?
Yes. Yeah. So I'll take everything back from you guys, exam, everything, and I'll grade them, and then once they're graded, you get everything back again. So I don't try to keep it from you. Solutions will be posted, just like our notes and homework solutions. I'm not trying to hide stuff from you guys.
So say we know one of the equations on the grade sheet matches up with a certain type of problem. If we don't feel like, we feel like we're pressed for time, we don't solve for that equation. Like say there's x and t or the transfer function.
Yeah, if you know, go for it. Just know if that's wrong, it's going to be hard for me to give you partial credit on that. Sure. Yes, sir.
Moment of inertia is about different things than we've seen in class. Should we brush up on those?
I would be aware of the really common ones, a mass and imperial rotation, maybe a rod around its end. That's one you should probably just remember in general because it comes up so often. But in general, if you don't know what the actual moment of inertia is, you can write I about this point, and you're going to get most of the way there. It might prevent you from getting perfect, but
right.
Almost, you'd be asymptotically approaching perfection at that point, if that's all you got wrong. Other questions?
So since there's no calculator involved, I'm sure it's going to be what we do in class compared to the homework.
Yeah, you'll have natural frequency, and it'll be in terms of Ks and Cs and Ms and stuff, or moment of inertia, not getting out to 42. Again, what I'm trying to measure, right, is do you know the vibration stuff, not can you plug in numbers in a calculator? Yes, sir.
Are systems with 2 degrees of freedom fair game?
Yes. We modeled those in Chapter 1, so right. We haven't talked 2 degree of freedom vibration, though, so... Right. There's a little bit of limitation on what you can see on a 2 degree freedom system, but I think modeling one is fair game.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Let's work some problems then. And we're probably going to work a little bit beyond what's directly in the notes. You might want to take a bit more notes than you usually do on the kind of second half of these problems, maybe. For example, this one just asked about modeling, but we'll talk about some other parts of it, maybe. On 1.100, we have mass whose position is described by x. we have. See. Connected via spring and damper to input Y2. Connected via spring to input Y1. Okay. And with all the equations, all the problems asking for is equations of motion. So that's where we can start. So how do you guys want to do this? You want to take a minute to set it up? You want to just walk through it together? Walk through it together. Okay. So where do we start? Free body diagram. Mass, what kind of forces do we have? Two springs and a damper. Okay. Anything else? We're kind of assuming all 1 degree freedom, so gravity, whatever, goes away. What's next? Pick some coordinate system where 1 degree of freedom stood. Doesn't tend to matter so much, but I think make it a part of your process so then when we get to chapter 4, you're just used to that being there. Okay, what's next? Pick what coordinate I want to use to describe the system. What makes sense here? X. So we have 1 degree of freedom. Why 1 degree of freedom? I got three things there defining the motion of the system. I'm controlling Y1 and Y2. That's right. Good deal. Okay. What's next? Pick a method. Okay. So Lagrange, Newton, Euler. Probably can set it up at least both ways. So let's start by setting up Newton, Euler. Okay. So we have the sum of the forces. We have them all positive the way we've drawn our arrows. Right. And we know that's going to equal mass times acceleration. In this case, our acceleration is just x dot, right? Okay. So we need to figure out what those spring and damper forces are. What's the force, first spring force? Right, so we know it's kind of K1 delta 1. Right. Well, in this case, if Y1 is larger than X, it's going to be aligned with our arrow. So we got that for the first end, spring force. Okay. Well, the second spring force? Well, we know it's going to be K2. Delta 2, and we have to play the same game. How do we pick the magnitude there so that the direction is positive in this positive direction? So Y2, if Y2 is larger than X, it's pulling on the mass this way, it matches our arrow, that's good. So I know the damper force is just the C times the damper coefficient times the rate of change of that length. So it follows the same convention. So if you have spring and damper in parallel, you pretty much can jump right to that without a whole lot of thought generally. So we have an equation of motion. Let's collect our terms, all the x terms on the left-hand side like we'd like to do. Here we go. Equation of motion. And of course, I could divide by m everywhere if I want. That form of the equation. Okay, what is the natural frequency of the system? And here I heard the square root of something.
Square root of K1 plus K2.
Right. Just this guy. What's the damping ratio? How do I get to the damping ratio? Yep. This guy here. Can get to that. I'm missing a dot over the x, I sure am. Thank you. Okay. So from there, I can write zeta in terms of stuff I know. I'm giving him the problem. Okay. So, really all the book problem asks for is equation of motion. Let's maybe set up with Lagrange just to see how that would work. We won't solve all the derivatives and stuff, right? So if I'm going to set up Lagrange's method, what do I need to do? Yes, sir?
On the test, will you like tell us to work it?
No, I will never tell you which way to work it. Okay, so Lagrange, what do we need to do? Kinetic and potential energy, okay? So let's look at kinetic first. Kinetic for this system is what? I heard some 1/2. Everybody's sure about that part. What else do we have? What do we have after that? Mx dot squared. Remember, if there is a more than 1 degree of freedom problem, that has to be the total velocity. So you can have vector form of that velocity dotted with itself, or vector form transpose times itself. Right? This is a vector, it's a dot product really, embedded in there. You've got to get the total velocity in all dimensions. Okay, so that gives us kinetic energy. What kind of potential do we have? Two springs, right? What's the first spring potential from this guy? Okay, what about the second one? Remember that those two guys, right? It's delta squared. And that delta would have to be in the multiple dimensions if you have it. Right. The question? That's fair game, I think, yeah. Okay, so we have potential. What do we have next here, Lagrange? Yeah, so we have damping, so we need to do our hack to get that dissipation function, which is what? Well, we know it's delta 2 dot, in this case, squared. Okay. Do we have any generalized forces in this case? No. So we know then that 0, then what's our equation of motion? I'm going to find the partials. What's that equation, though? All right, so L is T minus V, sure. Total time derivative, partial with respect to x. And if you do that math out, you'll get to this. Better. Okay. So let's think about this guy for a second. Let's say y1's fixed for all time. So it's just like fixing y1 to ground. So we're back to single input, single output. Let's let y2 be a pure harmonic. Actually, let's back up a half step. We'll get to that in just a second. So for now, let's assume both of those are 0. And then what I want what is the time response of x? Yeah, well, each of these is measured from some equilibrium place. So if they're both 0, they haven't moved from whatever their initial place was.
It's a formula.
Some kind of formula. If you don't remember that, how do you get to it? Look at the equation sheet. That's good advice. That's good. It's the truth. I appreciate the honesty. Yeah, that's one you probably should just remember. That shows up, exponential decay shows up in all kinds of stuff, right? Yeah. Okay. So then I have this as x of t. How do I figure out what a and b need to be? Right, so I take first derivative, you know, I could set this guy equal to x naught, plug in t equals 0, right? That's going to give me what a is. Then I take its first derivative, get, and I'm going to have x dot, plug in 0, solve equal to minus v naught. And then I would have a function, x of t as a function with those coefficients solved for, right? Because this is on the equation sheet, if you just give me this, you're not going to get a whole lot of credit for that if you don't really actually explain why and, you know, getting to the full solution would be. Right. You get a little bit for recognizing the right equation, but, you know. Okay? Yeah?
We don't need to explain how we get that right. We can just use that and solve for A and B.
Yeah, if you use this and you get to A and B, you're demonstrating I know what this equation really means and what I need to do with it. Right. If you just recopy it over, that's not demonstrating any vibration knowledge. Remember, that's what I'm trying to measure. Okay.
You want to see the full answer with like omega n and omega b plugged in as what we found it to be from the.
You can leave it as omega. So if you have omega n, we went back here and said, hey, omega n is this, and that you box that guy off, and you said, well, zeta is this, and you box that guy off. Right. Then yeah, you can leave as omega n and whatever is fine.
Mm-hmm. Can we just simplify it by like saying I of O equals whatever and then keep it as I of O?
Yeah, that's fine. Yep. Yeah, that's probably preferable actually instead of having to rewrite it a bunch of times.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so we said here's the time response. Plot the time response. What does it look like? What's where are we at time zero? We're at x naught. Let's say, will I make that up? X say it's actually positive up here. Okay. And we're going to have to pick some parameters. Let's start out without any damping. What does this plot look like? It's going to go to minus x naught. That's good. It's going to look like a sine wave. How does it start out, though? Down, right? So this, remember, this is the slope of that response, basically, at time zero, right? So it's minus v naught. So it should be something like this. I got the color wrong. Sorry. Okay. And we could, if we want, you know, could indicate kind of that slope's V naught. If you wanted to prescribe it a little bit more cleanly, if we can. Okay, so that's without any damping. Let's add a little bit, maybe. Guess I can do it real red now. Add a little bit of damping, what changes? It's going to start decaying some, and depending on what the damping ratio is, right? So this will decay. The initial conditions are still the same, right? So it still starts out the same. Something like that. Okay. Let's try one more. Double the damping. What changes? It's going to decay even faster, and we do start seeing a little bit. I tried to kind of indicate here that we are at that damp natural frequency, right? So that is oscillating a little bit slower as well, or more slowly. Okay, so what's the difference here? So we have no external output, right? Input. So this is just free vibration. So where do we settle to?
At some point,
right? But how would we define x? Kind of say, hey, this x is measured from its equilibrium position. So this should always go back to zero. If you define your state that way. My coordinate is the displacement from its equilibrium position. So it should always decay to zero then. Okay. Okay. Now, hey, y1 still fixed, but I'm going to move y2 pure harmonic fashion. I want to know, yeah, same thing. How do I get to there? I'm going to assume a solution. What kind of solution do I want to assume? Some kind of complex exponential, probably. I'm going to assume that for x. What am I really kind of saying about y? How do I want to represent y? I'm going to say, hey, well, this is really just the imaginary component right. And then, okay, well, let's just use the complex exponential for y for now, and remember that we're going to want the imaginary part at the end. So then you can take and plug in. And for this system, what you'd get x of t. So it's that magnitude phi, right, where phi tan minus 1 of some stuff, or some other stuff, and look it up on the equation. Or do the whole solution. There's a white bar in there. And I know that part because that's what for the system. Yeah, it's just a transfer function from y2 to x. All right, we fixed y1, it's just a normal seismically excited system. So that's how I know that that's the transfer function. I've done this a few times. Okay. So, again, let me make that note for you. So that's how you get to those terms, or you solve it out if you want, right? Okay, well, hey, I want to plot the response too. What kind of response are we generally going to plot if we're talking about pure harmonic inputs? Frequency response. Which means we're plotting what? Magnitude and phase versus what? Frequency of what? Of the input. That's omega, right? Okay. Let's say, hey, we're going to plot something like the magnitude of x, and that phi is going to be the phase shift. Okay. General piece of advice when you're drawing these plots, and you're probably going to be asked to draw some plots something like these on your exam, label things. Okay. Let me know that that's time and this is displacement and things like that, right? Okay, so for this guy, let's do the same thing we did. Without damping, what does this plot look like? Explodes at the natural frequency. So we can draw a line. Say at this place, omega equals that natural frequency. And we got it blowing up there in magnitude. What else happens? Starts at some constant. If we normalize it, it starts at 1. Otherwise, it's going to some kind of constant there. What about the other direction? Goes to 0. And you probably want to make the note. So your drawing can be a little bit sloppier if you're telling me what's happening. Some constant, so omega goes to 0. What's happening in the phase? You know, the discontinuity at natural frequency, you start out exactly in phase, so you have 0 degrees of phase lag, stays exactly in phase until the natural frequency, and then what happens? Exactly out of phase, and we say that's 180 degree phase lag, so it's minus 180. Add a little bit of damping. What changes? I have some kind of peak, some kind of finite peak now. Still go to 0 out there, still some constant here. Okay. Am I drawing this right? Why? The seismic one, right? You have this crossover here. That happens when the normalized frequency is square root of 2. So you could indicate that point too and start demonstrating some vibrations knowledge. What about phase? Crosses at negative 90. Let's talk about this one and what happens at it. Yeah, so if you have a seismic case, remember this trends towards minus 90 degrees of phase lag as input frequency goes to infinity, right? Because it's a seismic case. So we have something maybe like that. Where are we going to 90? Let's do one more. What changes? Peak to the left a little bit. Cross over that same point. Still going to zero, just kind of takes me longer to get there. Okay. What changes on the frequency? Yeah, they kind of overshoot with the frequency smaller. Still goes to 90. Okay. Questions about that? Yes. If you look at the phase here, right, so you can look, this is what, 2 zeta. Omega n squared, omega n squared, 2 zeta omega, and then this is this guy or that guy. So if you look at this and the limit as omega goes to infinity, you get to minus 90. The extra term, right? Yeah. Yes. Seismic inputs are position inputs, right? In the using the book's terminology, right? So we have a position that we're controlling. That's the actual input to the system. Right? Whereas this isn't what we would call, to use the book's terminology, a direct force excitation. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
That point where omega over omega equals 32, where it crosses over,
yeah.
That stays the same, like as you increase the amplitude?
Yes, they all cross right through there. There's actually a problem. I think I included it in what I put, we'll post today to ask you to do the math to prove that that's the case. Yeah. So it'll be in the notes. We probably won't get to it, but it'll be there if you want to look at why that crosses at square root of 2. I see another hand. Somewhere? Yeah, go for it.
What about frequency input, including phase?
Frequency input, including phase, what do you mean?
It's like it has like an asymptote to graph. Because this is excluding phase.
Well, we just broke the two this way, right? I think those plots in your book where it's plus or minus are really only helpful in the undamped case.
Okay.
Because they start breaking down when you have damping. Kind of. I think they get much harder to interpret.
Okay.
So I prefer these. I think there's some clarity here because there's kind of two distinct things rather than trying to cram both on the same plot. And this is probably what I tend to ask for. What's the amplitude and phase, not what's that in one plot? Yeah. Those phase terms come from, if we look at the complex form of this, they're going to have real and imaginary parts, right? So at some point over here, so you get the magnitude, gives you the square root stuff, and then you can get to that, will give you the phase shift. So phase plot, you see there's a lot in controls too, plotting stuff in the phase domain. So I knew this term. If we did the complex form, has the imaginary component. So it's there. So I need the tan minus 1 of that over the real part, which is going to be the omega n minus step. Okay. There's an omega n squared on the top and omega then to the fourth. Omega n squared squared, probably. Controls, you can actually get some stability information about your system looking here, too, if you did Nyquist.
So whenever you get your full response that has real and imaginary parts, you just multiply by the complex conjugate to get just the real one?
You can do that, right? So you can do that. In this case, what we did was take the, basically try to write this in magnitude and phase form,
okay.
Combine the phase into the single phase shift.
Okay.
But in the direct force case, you end up with just force on top,
okay.
Rather than use omega n, and you don't have any complex terms on top. So in the direct force case, yeah, you can do just straight complex conjugate. But this would work too there as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So if you would solve for x of t by like solving for your x bar,
mm-hmm.
You'd end up with the same answer as this?
Sure. That's where it came from, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a Y bar that I kind of forgot.
Okay.
It's there. I edit it in later.
Okay.
The questions.
Can you explain again, like, when you say take the imaginary component, like...
Yeah. Let's look. Come back. I'll erase Lagrange. Let's get this part. So you can end up with a complex transfer function, right? So we can write, if you're writing this, right? We said, hey, the x bar actually can be complex too, right? So we can write that as some real coefficient plus I times some complex coefficient, right? Kind of what we just drew up over there, right? Well, then I know also e to the I omega t. Is that, okay, do your FOIL, multiply that out, right, and you end up with some real components, coefficients, some complex coefficients, right? You get another, right? So if your input is sine, you just pick off these coefficients. Because my input was the imaginary part, I pick off the imaginary coefficients of what I get out there. If my input was a cosine originally, I know it was the real part of actually that complex exponential, so I just pick off the real parts. Other questions? I get the questions. You guys are awake today. I got to scare you with a test to keep you awake, I guess. Like maybe Hibbler's on something.
Why do you have two tan inverses?
So in this case, I have, if I look at the complex form of this, I end up with that
right.
Times y bar. Okay, so what we did is we basically did this guy, top and bottom.
Okay.
Right, so you get, this is, you know, square root omega n squared squared. Phi
so,
1.
So it's because you have imaginary at the top.
Imaginary top and bottom, yeah. And you do the same thing on the bottom, and you end up with phi 1 plus phi, or this minus, yeah. Phi 1 minus phi 2.
Right.
Yeah, that's, I think we actually went through that explicitly in the notes that day, where we did the full thing. This is very, and I can't give anything closer than what you're going to do on the exam, than this problem, basically. All right, so we had chapter one stuff, getting the model, right? Figuring out natural frequency and damping ratio. We had free vibration stuff, is chapter one. Then we have some chapter two, force vibration parts of it. So I can, in this one problem, I can check every step along the way of your vibrations understanding. Again, which is what I'm trying to measure. Okay. Other hand, yes, sir.
In one of the book problems, it asked for the imaginary transfer function, I believe. Is that just
complex transfer function? Yeah, that's
this. Yeah, the complex transfer function is just that. Okay.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's see. Which one we want to do? There's 231, which is similar to one you did. I'll leave it in the notes. We'll skip it for now. Let's look at 239. So in 239, what we have basically is I have, I'm just going to draw it as a point, a little bit different than how the book draws it. I have a massless inextensible link of length L. I have some gravity. I have a point mass at the end of that massless and extensible and flexible length L, and the wrinkle to this that makes it basically the crane model that we use for a lot of the research I do, my pin joint of this pendulum is moving, can move, right? So I can grab this, I have this pendulum system, I can hold this guy, now I can move back and forth. All right, and what we are looking for explicitly in the problem, we're looking for a transfer function. From my position input y to output angle theta. So that means that transfer function is what? What's the actual ratio? Yeah, so theta over y, right? So it's output over input. Okay, how do I get to that?
Equation of motion.
I need an equation of motion first. That's what's going to get that transfer function for me. So if I'm doing an equation of motion, what do we need? Your body diagram. I'm going to write that. In this case, this diagram's simple enough, I think we can do it right on the plot, right? So what kind of forces do we have? Gravity. Could blot that as some kind of reactions, possibly, depending on how we're going to consider this problem. Okay. Anything else? Well, that's it. Okay. How many degrees of freedom do we have? Why two? So we got votes for two because there's some kind of input here. I can control Y. I know Y exactly. I have perfect control over Y, so I really only have 1 degree of freedom. So in control terminology, this is a single input, single output system. Okay. So in that case, what do I want my coordinate to be, probably my generalized coordinate I'm going to use to describe this? Some kind of theta. I might want to define some frames here, right? What makes sense? I would do this. Because then theta is in a positive k direction, as it's drawn. And then we're going to use q to describe theta, equal theta, to describe the system. Okay. So, how do I want to solve this? That's our next question, right? Do I want to use Newton, Euler, or Lagrange? Of course, I can use either method. Which one is easier here? I hear Lagrange. Why Lagrange? It's not in pure rotation. What is, if it's not in pure rotation, what does that mean if I'm trying to use Newton Euler? I have to take into account the rotation, but I don't have pure rotation about anywhere. So I have to sum moments about the center of mass, which is down here, actually. Right? But then I have to figure out what this reaction force is to get how it's, why it's actually moving that way. Because those I can't sum about this point because it's not stationary. Right? So in this case, this is a problem. I would not specify, hey, you better use Lagrange, but you should know. So if we're going to use Lagrange, I think it is the preferred path. Okay. What do we need to know? Yeah, I'm going to have to pick some kind of datum. So what's a good choice there? Yeah, so the center of this. Okay, gravity datum up there, it's a kind of pin. What's next? And write some kind of energy. Okay. What's the total kinetic energy of this system? Okay. So we have one vote. Hey, this IO and theta dot squared. Does that get me there in this case? Yeah. So I'm not in pure rotation. Right. So I have some translational motion here. So I'm not in pure rotation about that point. I can't use that simplified form. There's some kind of thing, like, so the way to get to this is, how do I describe the total velocity of this point mass?
One half mass, y dot squared, plus one half IO, theta dot squared.
One half mass. That should end up getting you. Center mass, IO. No, that's not going to get you there. Because when you're doing that, you'd have to some moment, you'd have to get your rotational energy about the center of mass, which is actually this point. There's no rotational energy there. But I still would then have to describe the translational, total translational velocity of my center of mass. So that's still some kind of function of both y and theta dot. Right. So here's the shortcut. I need to know, I'm going to call it V sub M dot V sub M, right? I need to know the total velocity of that point, okay? Well, I know I kind of actually, let's say that frame is fixed where y is 0. So the frame is not moving with the pen. Okay. So if I write r of m relative to point O, which is the center of the frame, that's not moving, it's what? What's the x direction component? There's L sine theta. There's something else there, though. O is fixed. Y can move. There you go. What do I have in the J direction? And actually negative. So then I can take my total time derivative, got all of that, and you take the total time derivative of it to get the velocity. That's easy since our vector directions are fixed. So there I have Vm. Now I can take this guy. Yep. So we actually do get back to what he was saying, looks like. If you take that Vm. No, you have the cross terms. Sorry. Yeah, those cross terms show up. Question? Okay. Kind of halfway raising your hand. So at FEM, I can get to kinetic energy. What kind of potential do we have? Just gravity in this case. Sure. What's the gravitational potential? It's mgh, where h is what? Y minus. It's below the datum, right? So remember, eight, always remind myself, h is the height above the datum. So if you're below, you got the negative sign. Okay. Anything else? Oh, that's it. So we can then write, we don't have damping, so that R really is another RD term. We don't have any external non-conservative forces, so that Q term is 0. So then we can write our equation in motion. Okay. Get to our equation in motion. Okay. Let's just talk through, since we're kind of running out of time already. I want to get to at least another example. So we've got this guy, right? I'm going to solve this. I'm going to have some y terms in it, right? Okay. In the book problem, I think you're given actually that y is a sine or what, something like that. Okay. So how do I get from some equation in motion? Okay. We'll skip the math, all the math's here for you. We'll go there, sorry. So if I do have the Lagrange, that is an equation in motion. copied everything right. Yep. Okay. How do I get from there? We said we have to get the equation of motion in order to get to some transfer function. How do I get from there, my equation of motion, to that transfer function between y and theta? Assume a solution. I have to linearize it first. Right, this is a nonlinear equation of motion. Okay. I'm going to linearize the system. All right, so this is actually a nonlinear So I have to linearize it. What's the first choice I have to make if I'm going to linearize the system? Where to linearize about? Doesn't necessarily have to be in equilibrium. Okay. In this case, where would we like to normalize about? Theta equals zero. Kind of makes sense here, right? It is a stable equilibrium spot. If I stop moving y, that's where we're going to end up at. Okay. So we're going to assume small angles. About theta equals zero. So what does that mean for cosine of theta? It's approximately one. What does that mean for sine of theta? It's approximately theta. So I can use this small angle approximation, which has bundled in it, actually Taylor series expansion of the system. So then I get to a linearized equation of motion. Let's divide by, let's put the y double dot on the other side, let's keep theta on this side, and then divide by ml squared. And I get that. Right. Yep. Okay. So I have a linearized equation of motion. Yes, sir.
Where does the y double dot come from?
This guy. So when you square that, you end up with some cross terms of this guy. Mm. And then when you take the derivative, that y dot survives the partial.
Okay.
And then you take a total time derivative, so, and you get y double dot. Yes, sir.
Why is it positive on the right side, or should it be negative?
Should be negative. Okay, so now I have a linearized equation of motion in a form we kind of like it. What's the natural frequency of this system? Square root of g over l. Does it make sense in this case? Yeah, it's just a pendulum. Square root of g over l. So how do I go from this to some kind of transfer function? I'm going to assume some kind of input. And you can say y of t is some kind of pure harmonic. What do I want to pick here? I could pick an exponential. I noticed I don't have damping, though, so I could just pick a sine if I wanted to, right? Either way, it's fine. You guys want a sine or exponential? Exponential it is. Okay. And it's a sine. Let's say it really is the imaginary part of that complex exponential, but the complex exponential is fine. Could also be cosine. I just need to pick the real component. Yeah, okay. It's still a pure harmonic.
So, like, if you don't specify the test, you say a harmonic we could choose.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. So I have that. What do I need to do next? Take two derivatives. Okay, we assume some form of theta then. theta double dot then is y bar here, yeah. Thank you, sorry. Then I could plug into my equation. Entering this class, since we don't have any damping, we end up with all real components anyway. So the complex and this doesn't actually cost us any extra work here, even if we chose to use it. Right? So we can see that goes away, that guy goes away, both sides. We end up with my bar. So then we can write theta bar over y bar. And there we have our transfer function. And we also, as a result, have our time response. Excuse me. All right. What's the frequency response of the system look like? Still going to explode to infinity at omega equals omega n, right? The denominator, this goes to zero. Yeah. That's infinity. What happens down at low frequency? Goes to some constant, they say. At one volt for zero. Why zero? Yeah, so intuitively, if that goes to zero in this case, then y is not moving. That guy settles to zero. Steady state place is zero. Mathematically, I can see that. If I look at the limit of this as omega goes to zero, I got a zero on top. So my magnitude goes to zero. Okay. So similar to what we saw, but a little bit of a wrinkle. Should go to zero. It's 1/-0. I see -1/L. Yeah. Take the limit of that as omega goes to infinity. Okay. Questions about that one? But even this it's not such a bad problem, right? We have chapter one modeling stuff, right? We could embed, hold that fixed and there's some initial angle and it oscillates and give me the time response, plot the time response. Okay, now assume y is moving. What's the transfer function? What's the frequency response? Questions? Okay, let's see which one of these is best. Let's look at a little bit of a variation on that one since we don't have a ton of time left. guess I could have left that. We'll talk through this. This is actually one you guys had on the homework, but let's just chat through it. So basically what we have in this case is a fixed pendulum, but I have a pure torque about the pen. Pure torque M about the pen. And what we wanted is a transfer function from that pure torque to theta. Which, as we said, output over input, that means we were looking for theta over M. Okay. In terms of the types of systems we've looked at, direct force, seismically excited, rotating and balanced, all these different oscillating systems, which one is this? Direct force. Direct force, yeah. I mean, it's a moment, it's a torque there, but that is a torque acting directly on the system. Okay, so what does that tell you the frequency response should look like? Same as free vibration. Frequency response doesn't make a lot of sense for free vibration. Blows up in infinity. Yeah, you can kind of see what we had here, maybe a little bit. What's different from the seismically excited case? I don't have this crossover point, direct force, and I go to minus 180 rather than 90. So you could look at this and recognize, hey, that's a direct force system, and sketch out a frequency response without writing a single equation. Right? Okay. Excuse me. We're going to get to this transfer function. What do we need to do? Equation of motion. I'm going to draw forces, mg. So we've got gravity. We have the reactions at the pen. I have the applied force or applied moment, M. So what's different about this problem that makes it a bit easier to solve? It's in pure rotation, right? So if I wanted to go down the Lagrange route, it's in pure rotation. I could use those pure rotational forms of energy now, right? Or this is way easier to solve in Newton-Euler than the last problem because it is in fixed and we can sum moments about the pen really easily. Okay. Yeah. So maybe let's do that real quick. We can set this up. I'm going to sum. Let's do Newton-Euler to set it up since we did the last one, Lagrange. Sum of the moments about pen's point O. We get some moments there because it's fixed, right? The thing's in pure rotation about that point. So I have the sum of the moments about point O. What is the kind of moment side of that equation? Well, how that applied moment in what direction? Positive K. Okay. I also have something else. What else do I have? Gravity, right? So I can do that. Cross products is never going to steer you wrong. So then I can write I know J cross J is going to be 0. Look at that. Does that make sense physically? Yes? Why? Yeah, so you can think about that in terms of what effect it has. We're looking at the signs. What effect does it have on theta? Is one way to think about this from the physical perspective. Right? So my moment is always trying to make theta bigger. Right? So that kind of right side, it's always pushing it away from its equilibrium. Right? Gravity, on the other hand, is trying to push it, make theta smaller back towards its equilibrium. So it looks like we got the signs right. And everything's in K, so it stays in the plane, which it better if we're talking about a planar problem. Okay? What's the other side of this equation? Well, I keep reminding you guys this. Rate of change of angular momentum about point on the planar problem that can simplify to, quite often simplifies to, in this case, all right, is it alpha? I about point O alpha. What's that angular acceleration? Just theta double dot in the k direction, right? So that also makes sense. We got K there. We only have K there. We have a planar single degree freedom system. And then we can write our equation of motion. Linear or nonlinear, this equation? Nonlinear, right? So we need to linearize, basically just like we did in the last problem. Assume some kind of form for the moment M, and then you can get to the transfer function. And again, this one's actually been posted since the homework solutions went up, but thought useful to talk through it really quickly. If I was going to do Lagrange with this, right, we said we can use a pure rotational form of energy. How do I handle this M? It's a virtual work, right? So I know that, hey, Q, we're going to have some Q1 is non-zero. Right? It has a direct non-conservative external force. Right? So I know, hey, that virtual work thing is Q1, I only have one coordinate, okay? Well, where has this force acting? So it's mk dot with theta k, right? So it actually ends up being theta, right? Q1 is actually theta, so I know that Q1 is just m. Right, which should make sense because M is acting directly on theta. Remember, think about those generalized forces as what component of that input, that force input, is causing motion in the generalized coordinate that you're describing. So M acts directly on theta, it causes motion directly on theta.
What if there was an applied force on the mass directly?
Applied force down here. Yeah, we worked one of those examples in class, right? So you need force dotted with the virtual displacement of this point, and then you just match up terms. Saw a hand somewhere. Nope. Okay. See you guys on Thursday.